Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are back in Lexington as it has turning colder and darker, which you expect in Kentucky this time of the year. Ryan McGee has
joined Paul. Us.
You just told me something I'm really curious about.
Yeah.
We were listening to Taylor Hicks saying,
yes.
Call Paul. Tell us about your daughter and the intersection of her and song.
So I did not. I mean, I met Taylor. I think we were in Tuscaloosa a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's usually
I'd
around.
Never met him, and I know you guys have been friends for years. But my daughter, who's a teenager, and she one summer just started rifling through American Idol winners on YouTube, and I go, "Hey, I know that guy." She's like, "You do not." I go, "I do." And so we texted him and. He contacted us back, and it blew my daughter's mind. So it was, but it is. You and I were just talking about this. It is hard to explain to people now how amazingly gigantic, what a juggernaut that American Idol was back in the day.
Well, it was really interesting. Obviously, I was in Birmingham at the time. America, I think it was year two. Reuben Studdard, remember
yeah.
him? He won American Idol.
Birmingham, he's an Alabama guy, right?
And then. Yep. Here comes, I think in year four when Carrie Underwood won.
Yeah.
That's how she got her start, in case
yeah.
you were wondering. The runner-up was, I think his name was Bo Bice, another
yeah.
guy from Birmingham. So, I mean, the entire city was on fire, and then here comes Taylor Hicks.
Yeah, and won the whole thing. Well, we had, I'm from North Carolina, we had Fantasia Barrino was from High Point.
Yeah.
Kelly Pickler was from Albemarle,
right.
just up the road from me. And we yeah, but it's but like
now
like,
Scotty McCurry, did he win American Idol?
He did, and he
okay.
and he was a North, NC State guy,
right?
While he was a student, yeah. So
I've met him, yeah.
But those guys, it is you're exactly you said it before we came out break. It is hard to explain to people how massive that show was. You good?
I've got a heater that literally fell on my leg here, so.
I was like, what's he doing?
They put a heater down here when
yeah.
it got cold.
Well, the good news is you got a heater.
So I moved closer to it. Then the next thing I felt my pants burning, and I realized that the heater was
yeah.
literally going up against my pants.
It's like my first
so
car was like an old Philadelphia 88, and the heater would burn your leg.
I'm trying to move the heater, and if you know a good men's store in town, I need to go buy some new pants.
So glad I was here to witness this. That kind of gets us to Michigan, right? Hot mess.
Yeah. So while we were talking, or we were together earlier, Laura just told the story of the unmentioned hotel.
Yeah. Our hotel is. I'm a big movie guy, and it is when we got to our room. So I'm sorry. So I was lost in the hotel. They gave me a map, and they said this is where you are, and I got completely lost, and I was totally embarrassed. But then, as I was walking back. Across the hallway again, I passed you in the hallway, and I didn't feel so bad anymore. I was like, oh, Paul's lost it.
And then we tried to find an elevator, and nobody could help us.
It's like The Shining. It literally looks like the hallway. If you ever seen The Shining, the two little twins
yeah.
at the end of the hallway, the hallway looks just like that, and just like The Shining, we could not get out of the hotel.
And the worst part is, I think it's the fourth time I've stayed at this hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice hotel.
It's great.
I think it used to be a barn.
It's very old school.
It's like a...
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah. Was it a barn?
No.
Oh, so I mean, it's very...
Has it always... Do people always get lost?
Yes.
Okay, I feel better then. All right.
I mean...
Literally, I was wandering down the hallway, and I passed Paul, like ships in the night, trying to find our rooms.
Well, it's very in keeping with the thoroughbred industry, because they're and...
Yeah.
I think I saw Secretariat running through the hallway.
the ghost. So the ghost of Secretariat is still lost, and still stuck in the hotel.
But, I mean, it is... I stayed at this hotel... at the beginning of my career, and now I'm there at the end of it. So it is a remarkable, but I just don't know how.
Y'all, so we come down in the lobby.
In case of a fire, I don't know what I'm going to do.
We come down in the lobby, and we're waiting on Laura, and Paul goes, hey, Laura's going to be here in a few minutes. I'm going to take this time to figure out like where the elevator is.
So I walked around.
And he leaves, and he's gone, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, and came back, and he goes, I'm more confused now than I was when I left.
Yeah. And then Laura texted me and says, I apologize. It took me 5 minutes to find my room. I said, I still haven't found my room.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's only a 2 or 3 story hotel.
It's got a horse in the front. It's very Lexington. I get the feeling that a lot of people who invested a lot of money in a lot of animals over at Keeneland have probably spent time at that hotel.
It's a horse hotel. And the one thing that I did notice that it's easy to find bourbon at that hotel.
No, that I will say that the easiest thing to find were literally you crawl over barrels to get to the bar. So. And welcome to Kentucky.
I mean, most rooms, especially if you're like a member of the Silver Club, they give you 2 bottle of waters. They gave me, I had a Knob Creek and some other, and I drank them both, which is why I'm so crazy right now.
So we were already confused in the hotel, and then we got our brains.
I mean, I don't know what it says on the craziest day of the college football season when one of the 2 or 3 best-known coaches gets suspended for the biggest game of the year. All I can think about is I've got to go back to that hotel in 45 minutes to find my room.
You might find Harbaugh in the hallway with a headset running 2-a-days. No, you and I, as is typically the case on Friday, you and I are on the 9-whatever flight every week, and we saw each other this morning and immediately were like, well, what do you think is going to happen and when's it going to happen? And we said then probably a few games, and we'll probably find out, by the time you hit air, and literally, and by the way, props to Stoops. I thought for him to have sat down as the story was breaking, I thought he answered your questions extremely well.
Yeah, Coach Stoops was here about 2 hours ago, and
I mean, literally, as the story was breaking.
I'm reading the breaking news. I wasn't breaking. The only thing I've broken today is my head trying to find my room. But and then I asked them about it, and the most honest moment I think I've seen in a long time, I said, well, how do you think it's going to affect them tomorrow? He said, well, who are they playing?
Right.
By the way, why should he?
Yeah, but then you go.
He's playing Alabama.
Then you go Penn State, he goes, oh. I mean, well, that's a big deal. So, yeah, it's just, but he was very frank, I thought, about, the challenge of you prepped your team and now you can't coach. And he said, and imagine I've just found out about this. And I just – so it was the realest response I've seen from a coach about this whole thing, because it was very raw in the moment.
It was a weird moment, because you don't want to ask a head coach who's making $8 million a year, are you guys really important on game day?
Yeah, yeah. Are you necessary?
And,
yes, I am.
I mean,
necessary.
He said – he did say, and I pulled it out of him, that the preparation is probably more important.
Yep.
But everyone knows there are decisions made in the game that are critical.
Well, and if you're a great head coach, that's how you have structured it. And it's just like being the CEO of any corporation. Ultimately, everyone being in the White House, ultimately, no matter what everyone else does, at some point someone looks at you and says, well, what are we going to do now? And that's the head coach's job. A great head coach, if you watch in the moments, he's the one that he will lean on everyone around him. But ultimately, I mean, the buck stops here that's a cliche for a reason.
It is. Harry Truman, I don't think he – do you think he came up with that? He's most famous for it.
It was on the desk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had it on his desk. But Harry Truman, by the way, we'll see what Missouri does tomorrow.
We will. Harry will be cheering for the good old University of Missouri. Ryan, this has been my favorite segment of the year. I still don't know what we were talking about, but it doesn't matter because we got an expert coming up next, Chris Doering. He will pick the games, including Tennessee and Missouri.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back. As we are working our way through the program, the crowd here is cold. Most people have gone to local bars, and I don't blame them one bit. Welcome back. Let's get to studio. Chris Doering, a lot of big games to cover tomorrow. One of the most interesting slates of the year. Chris, thank you for the time. We begin with Auburn heading to Arkansas.
Florida in the swamp. You feel like maybe they figured some things out. I like the fact that they got back to the basics. What Arkansas has done well the last couple years, that's run KJ Jefferson, that's getting a push up front for Rocket Sanders. And with that defense that now has become very opportunistic, I feel good about this team, man. There was a lot of positivity watching that Arkansas effort last week. And I think this is a game at home. They need some reason to be positive. When we last saw them, it was a miserable effort there at home and a home loss to Mississippi State. So I think it's time for them to get back on track. I'm not buying the improvement that the passing game has made at Auburn. I think that's something I'm going to have to see consistently over a long period of time. So I think this is one that that defense can take away, be opportunistic and get some takeaways. And at the end of the day, let's keep running KJ and Rocket and see if we can't win two ball games in a row. I like Arkansas here.
Okay, we've got a number of other games.
I'll go quickly. I'm sorry.
Mississippi State, a team that is in desperate need of a win like Arkansas was a week ago, heading out to A&M, which has been desperate for wins all year.
Yeah, it's two desperate coaches for sure, with a lot of criticism towards each of those coaching staffs throughout the season. I don't know what Mississippi State is. At least I know what to expect with Texas A&M. Offensively, Mississippi State's been tough to figure out. The defense maybe is the biggest head scratcher with as bad as they've been, despite returning so much production. I'm going with A&M at home in this one.
Let's check out the next game, which is Florida at LSU. Florida, first of all, before we get to the game, I want to just get your reaction to where you live, what people are saying, and how they feel right now after just a gut punch loss.
It's crazy, isn't it, Paul? Because I think we go back at the beginning of the season, the Vegas win total was 5.5 games. Well, here we sit, Florida's at 5 wins, but this was looking like a much more positive season a couple weeks ago, and you lose the back-to-back ball games against Georgia, which is not a sin, but the home game following that one against Arkansas, who had lost 6 games in a row. This is not so much about the wins and losses to me. It's about the way the team looks in losing ball games. You go back to the Utah game, the Kentucky game, the procedural issues, the special teams flaws, the too many men on the field, too few men on the field. It looks like a lot of disorganization. Now, I love some of the young players on this team, but I think there needs to be some changes in the offseason as it relates to, one, dedicating a coach to coach special teams, and two, allowing Billy Napier to handle a little bit more of the oversight of the program instead of being so caught up in the offensive game planning and play calling. So I look for something similar to happen, like what happened in Como with Eli Drinkwitz passing that to Kirby Moore.
And I want you to explain what that means, because when you call the plays, I would think it would take up an enormous amount of time. What do you think he misses out on by doing that?
Well, one, I think you end up being hyper-focused on one side of the ball, and maybe you're not able to be as objective on the other side of the ball. Two, I think, the demands off the field as a head coach of an SEC program, It's like being a CEO of a big business, and you have the media obligations. You're having to deal with recruiting. You're having to deal with NIL and transfer portal stuff. So much on your plate as a head coach. And I learned that from Gene Chizik. Chiz talked about what it was like moving into that position for the first time, and that was, you know, what, 15 years ago. So it's a much more challenging situation now than it ever has been before. And I think, you know, being able to look at the picture from a much higher vantage point than being in the weeds of having to game plan and look at tendencies of defenses and call plays from the sideline, it just, I think it's too much on one coach's plate these days.
Okay, let's get to the game. What happens?
Yeah, I wish I had better positivity about this ball game, but you know, I think the two factors that I look at that may give Florida a chance, it would be one, the status of Jaden Daniels. We expect him to play, but how much has he been able to really practice this week? How sharp will he be after suffering that concussion or being in concussion protocol last week? And two, where's the mindset of LSU after losing that ball game you put so much energy into against the Tide in Tuscaloosa? Can you bounce back? Do you have enough juice in the tank? I do think this is a close ball game, but at the end of the day, I think that it's probably LSU that gets the home win.
Big game in Como, Tennessee. Waiting for Georgia next week, but they've got to get through Missouri first. What happens?
It's a good point you make. I mean, it could potentially be a look-ahead spot for Tennessee with Georgia on the horizon. But I think everybody, at least in this conference, has figured out that Missouri's a good football team. Even in a loss last week against Georgia, they showed that they were competitive with the best team in the conference. But they're a complete football team, great quarterback, skilled players around him, tough running back that leads the conference in yards on the ground, a defense that has been very stout up front. So I actually think that Missouri should be the favored team here. I'm a little surprised that it's Tennessee. I understand what happened the last 2 years, but I think Missouri breaks that trend and gets a win in Como.
We are running out of games. Let's check out Alabama taking on the University of Kentucky right here.
Yeah, back in the summertime, Paul, I picked this as my upset of the year. I thought that Kentucky was going to be playing much better than maybe they are at this point in the season. And I expected Alabama to be in a much different space. I thought that they had a lot of holes in their roster, a lot of inexperience at the quarterback position, a lot of young guys up front on the defense. And I thought this was a team that could lose two or three ball games this year. I guess they could lose two at this point, or three, in fact. But they look like they're just playing so much better. And I don't know how you feel about this, Paul. I think Nick Saban, even though he's never considered for SEC Coach of the Year, I think he deserves to be the Coach of the Year this year for the job he's done to bring that team along, what he's done to push the right buttons, even the benching of Jalen Milroe, what that did to springboard the team to a much higher trajectory of where they're playing now. Seems to be incredibly in touch with his team, and I really like what this Alabama team has been able to turn themselves into as the season's wore on. I do think it's a tough game, a noon game against a conference opponent on the road. We don't see many of those for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and they've played some sloppy games in years past on the road, particularly in that early window. So I think it's a close game, but I think Alabama finds a way to get the win there in Lexington.
And let's get to the biggest game of the day in Athens, Ole Miss. Heading to the Dogs.
Yeah, I learned my lesson here with you 2 weeks ago, man. When I picked Florida to beat Georgia, I'm not going against the Bulldogs anymore. As much as I think this is the best Ole Miss team that Lane Kiffin has had going into a big ball game, I still think the biggest key to me is watching the way that Lane Kiffin approaches this game. I thought 2 years ago when they went into Tuscaloosa, it seemed more like desperation with some of the fourth down decisions early in the game that basically ran them out of the ball game before the second quarter was over. I'm interested to see, because I think you have to be authentic in who you are. I think he's a gambler by nature. I think this is an aggressive team. But I also think he believes that they can go toe-to-toe more with Georgia than they probably could have in years past. And so I think one of the big keys in this one is how much the quarterback, Jackson Dart, is able to be involved in the run game. Early in the year, he was a big factor in it. After the Arkansas game, he kind of got nicked up, and they've reluctantly used him on the ground. But you go back and look, whether it was Brady Cook last week, whether it was Peyton Thorne early in the year, the quarterback involvement in the run game has had a lot to do with the success of teams against that Georgia defense. I think they're able to hang in there for a while, but at the end of the day, I think Georgia's able to put them away in the fourth quarter.
Chris Doering, thanks so much. A review of the big games tomorrow. We're going to take a break here. Before we do, don't forget tomorrow night, the final after Florida and LSU.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
And welcome back. We're in Lexington on what has been an eventful day up here and around college football, arguably the biggest day of the year so far in the college football season, about what happened off the field. By now, you may have heard this news that the Big Ten has suspended Jim Harbaugh for the remainder of the regular season. That means tomorrow's game against Penn State, Maryland, and then the season ender in Ann Arbor against Ohio State. That means he would be back if Michigan qualifies for the Big Ten championship. This has certainly been a controversial week. There's a lot of back and forth. Michigan indicates that it will try to seek a TRO, temporary restraining order. There's a lot of legality there, and one of the most interesting things that the Big Ten did in responding, they did not specifically mention Harbaugh. They directed this toward the University of Michigan, which, according to some legal experts, could make it more difficult to get an injunction. Let's talk about that and so much more with John Talty from 24/7, who has watched the college football season for a number of years. John, let's just dig in a little bit on what stands out from this bewildering week with Jim Harbaugh and the Big Ten commissioner.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly, unprecedented, fascinating. Any word or adjective you want to use to describe it, I mean, it truly is, in some ways, unbelievable that we're here. I mean, I can't think of many more situations, if any, where a coach as prominent as Jim Harbaugh could be suspended multiple times in a single season for two different things. And I think it's almost kind of quaint thinking about some of the things he got in trouble for earlier in the year that he got suspended for. But it's quite the showdown. I think it was building up to this moment of, Michigan obviously really kind of firmly entrenched in its position, and what would the Big Ten do? What would its new commissioner do? And here he is, and the conference as a whole really pushing back strongly, really delivering, I think, a pretty firm punishment and showing that Michigan is not going to get preferential treatment despite it being one of, if not the biggest brand within the conference. And so I'm curious to see. I'm not a legal expert either. I'm curious to see whether that TRO is possible. I've been trying to read up and talk to as many people as possible. I do think there's some potential hangups there. But just for this to drop on a Friday, truly one of the ultimate news dumps in some regard, but especially with as big of a game as they have tomorrow against Penn State, is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, John, and there's been so little time to really process all this, but this back and forth, and Michigan fans have just, prior to Tony Petitti's decision, just unloaded on him in every imaginable way. And for those who don't know, Tony Petitti is is a fairly new commissioner. He's a Harvard Law graduate, worked in White Shoe corporate law in Manhattan. He's worked with Major League Baseball as their chief operating officer. This is not some guy that probably really cares what University of Michigan fans think of him. He's running one of the truly gold standard franchises in all of sports, John. And I'm curious your thoughts on how he has handled this in the middle of this storm, especially at a time when you rarely, if ever, see a conference turn on itself.
Yeah, I think it's really a no-win situation for him in some regard, because I think especially the way that it blew up into what it's become, in which, and it's been obviously well reported over the last couple of weeks, but all of the different calls between coaches and ADs and other university leaders within the Big Ten, not only those calls, happening, but also all of the information that leaked out of them made it very clear that quite a few people in powerful positions at different Big Ten universities wanted Michigan to be punished. And that put, I think, him in a position where it felt like he had to do something. On the flip side, we've seen Michigan's argument out there of, in some ways unprecedented for the Big Ten to step in and do what it's doing. So it's kind of a unique situation. I think sometimes I go back to, I think other people have made this comparison as well, but, Mike Slive kind of coming at the SEC, and one of the big things he accomplished was getting the SEC to stop kind of turning on each other, get them to stop, ratting each other out and kind of keep some of it more in the family as he tried to clean things up. And we've seen the Big Ten, numerous people turn against each other. I mean, it's very obvious that within the Big Ten, especially with coaches and ADs, that Jim Harbaugh is not the most liked person. I think that there are people who have taken this situation very personally, and I think they wanted a pound of flesh. And I think, Tony Petitti and the Big Ten as a whole got pushed into a situation where it felt like if they didn't do something, that was going to lead to an uproar within the conference. And here we have the solution that they have. I'd be, curious to see more of the rationale behind it. Really an interesting penalty when you think about it, Paul, that they're not putting it on Harbaugh, they're putting it on the university, but he's suspended from being at games but can still coach during the week. I'm sure there are lots of lawyers and other people involved who come to that decision, but that's one of the more unique or unusual penalties that I can think of.
Talking to John Talty, John, it's fascinating, especially at this moment in time, but I want to get back to something you said, because I'm not sure what Tony Petitti would have done in this case had the rest of the league gone crazy on Harbaugh. And yeah, they may dislike him, but there's more to it than that. Just in terms of the many, many people that with whom you speak to in the industry, from coaches to agents to all kinds of administrative officials, what do you think was the tipping point for Petitti in relation to what he heard and the overwhelming number of people who clearly wanted something done?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly some of the people who are respected within the conference speaking up. That's always going to, have an impact on the situation. But I also think if we go back to just kind of what we saw come out today, I think it's very clear that the NCAA feels good about what they have been able to put together. And I think the fact that Charlie Baker, again, someone who also is in his position and fresh, trying to, make changes throughout the NCAA, all these different things, he's been in that job for less than a year. The fact that he was directly involved in terms of sharing information and investigation that they have put into Michigan and Connor Stallions and the sign-stealing scandal, I think gives Tony Petitti and the Big Ten something to fall back on, that look, they have the goods. They've shared it with all of us. We feel confident in what they've been able to uncover to this point, that it's not pure just innuendo. It's not pure just coaches complaining or whatnot. They believe that there's real proof for this situation. But again, I think the fact that there are as many people that have come out, we've seen more and more people even speak publicly. I think Ryan Walters, some of his comments, I think, were pretty strong. But more and more people really voicing, hey, something needs to be done here. This went above and beyond reproach in terms of what we think is allowed or kind of understood to be okay within college football.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results. Fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence, knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
John, because I haven't really had much chance to read the NCAA inclusion here, but can you explain what the NCAA seems to be saying? Because in a way, they seem to be backing this, do they not?
Yeah, I mean, it seems, you know, the information that's been provided is, and I forget the exact wording that they used. Maybe somebody can help pull that up, but. You know, that they have, again, pretty feel good about the information that they have and being able to tie multiple pieces of the operation back to this point. And it also lends me to believe, again, I think the important thing to understand here and remind people of, Paul, is that this is the Big Ten doing this, right? The NCAA is the one who is doing the investigation. NCAA has been able to provide some of its findings to this point to both the Big Ten and also, of course, to Michigan. But the NCAA has its own path, and as we know, Paul, those things typically take a very long time. But I think what's important to remember is that this is still early on in the process. This is an immediate action that is being taken, but I would not be surprised at all, just in what we have seen released to this point, for the NCAA to ultimately levy some pretty strong infraction case, maybe some pretty strong punishments down the line as well. It feels like, again, that they have, you know, already been able to acquire information that, you know, speaks to the pervasiveness of this specific situation.
But John, doesn't the commissioner have, isn't this within his purview based on the Big Ten bylaws, which I acknowledge Petiti seemed to go around at some point, but this is not the classic due process. I mean, this is just one part of a case. It's not about whether Michigan can be disallowed to participate. This is just about the conduct of the university based on where they are right now.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I think part of the argument I think that we've seen Michigan make is kind of the due process nature of things, that this is an early juncture in the investigation, and that ultimately, there should be, you know, no penalty until it's completed. Now, we have seen people, you know, get penalized. I think you can look at it either way you want, really, Paul, that you can make an argument that people get suspended or fired, all kinds of different things before the process has fully played out. I mean, let's tie it back to the SEC for a second here. Like, you know, the Tennessee Jeremy Pruitt situation is still playing out, and he got fired based on the information that they had. So I don't think things have to be completely – things are not always decided after the full due process has played out. But the flip side is that this has played out so quickly, I think, is part of what's remarkable about it. And I think if you're Michigan, obviously the argument has been like, hey, like we're still trying to get our arms around this. We're still trying to understand the extent of what actually is. We're still trying to understand what, if any, ties there are back to whether it's staff members. To this point, obviously, the NCAA and others have said that there's not a direct link back to Jim Harbaugh, which is why they came up, I guess, with the penalty that they did, aimed more at the university than the specific head coach. But it's a complex issue, Paul, and I think that's, you know, there's just a lot of different kind of cooks in the kitchen, I guess, to use that analogy. And really what I mean by that is there's a lot of lawyers involved, and there's going to be even more lawyers involved. And you've got Michigan lawyers, you've got Jim Harbaugh's personal lawyer, you've got NCAA lawyers, you've got Big Ten lawyers. I mean, there's just a lot of different people involved. And again, I'm trying to be as well-read and talk to as many people as I can about it, but it's just legalese. And it's, you can parse it different ways depending on either your perspective or kind of what you want the outcome to be.
John, one more on that, and I want to pause and actually get to the game some more, but Sports Illustrated is reporting that last week Michigan's regents discussed leaving the Big Ten if Jim Harbaugh was suspended without due process. I mean, you talk about story of the year in college football. I mean, can you even conceive of this, or do you think maybe this relationship has been damaged beyond repair?
I will say, Paul, talking to, you know, different people over the last couple of weeks, and just talking to people who talk to people, you know, one of those type things, I would say that there has been incredible anger on the Michigan side of things. And I think that there has been a feeling among some people that if this is really what they want to do, if they want to try to drop a nuke on us, meaning Harbaugh being suspended, serious penalties, that we might consider firing a nuke back. And I think you've seen a concerted effort, I think especially about maybe from the last week or so, of more of the Michigan perspective being out there in the media. I think it started with them kind of putting out there, you know, media reports popping up, let me put it that way, of other schools stealing signs and things like that. I think that there is a lot of anger, again, amongst some important Michigan people. And that's going to be a really challenging thing for, again, Tony Petitti to have to figure out, and the Big Ten to have to figure out. And we've seen, let's go back, you know, to his predecessor, Kevin Warren, and some of the anger that there was within that conference when he canceled the season back in 2020, the pandemic. And, you know, in some ways he never got those people back as allies. And so this is, again, I think a really big move by Tony to go against a school like Michigan and all its influence and power and brand and all those different things. And how do you find a way to both do what's best for the conference, but also try to keep Michigan, pulling in the same direction and not risk them going rogue. That's going to be an interesting thing to figure out.
John Talty, not exactly what I planned to talk to you about, but we will follow up after this weekend about Nick Saban and the resurgence of the Crimson Tide. John Talty joining us on the breaking news relating to Jim Harbaugh.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.